There's a verse from Proverbs that struck me recently. Proverbs 26:13, which says, "The sluggard says, there is a lion in the road. There is a lion in the streets." Now, very few Americans, very few of us, would ever admit to being a sluggard or to being afraid. But there is a sense in which these two things are the root of just about every sin. What we lack is what the English would call pluck. We suffer from a severe lack of nerve and can be gripped by fear. Now, sometimes that manifests itself as fight or flight, or just plain old paralysis. Fear has that kind of effect on us. Whether we're putting off a hard discussion with someone else, or simply trying to keep ourselves safe, we all have that lion in the street that keeps us from being what God intends us to be. And we all know the name of that lion, personally. And we also know what it eats. Elijah's lion was named Jezebel, or at least that's what he thought. And you know the story. He had a wager with the prophets of Baal about which god would consume with fire a sacrifice. The prophets of Baal went on and on. They cut themselves, but Baal did not answer. Elijah poured more and more water on the sacrifice. And he said, "Well, perhaps your god is using the restroom." And it's a Hebrew euphemism. Maybe your god is covering his feet. In other words, he's going poo. And so Elijah's going on and on, talking trash to the prophets of Baal. And soon, God consumes the sacrifice with fire. Elijah fights the prophets. He actually kills them all. Now, the queen of the north, the queen of Israel, was Jezebel. Her husband was Ahab. Jezebel was a follower of Baal. It gives you the state of Israel at the time. And so she decided to pursue Elijah. And he became terrified. And she said, "What you did to them, I will do to you 100-fold. So Elijah ran. Elijah was on the road. Elijah ran in fear. And what does God ask him 2 times? "What are you doing here, Elijah?" As he's on his journey, he ends up at Sinai, and God asks the same question. "What are you doing here, Elijah?" Elijah is afraid. Jezebel is his lion. Jesus, after feeding the multitude, finally gets his chance to pray, to refuel. Remember, he had dealt with disappointment in Nazareth, and he'd heard about John the Baptist being beheaded, and he fed the multitudes. He was exhausted, but he did not sleep. If you do the math, he prays from the evening all the way to, the old school version say, the fourth watch, which is just before sunrise. He prays all night. He prays all night to be with his Father. Then we have the story we all know. The disciples think they are seeing a ghost with Jesus walking on water to them. And Peter, for a moment, walks on water as well. Now, we give Peter a hard time. But as John Ortberg has written in a book, if you want to walk on water, you have to get out of the boat. Peter got out of the boat. The other disciples stayed in. gripped by their own fear. Now, the typical trajectory for sermons like this is to say, keep your eyes on Jesus and you won't fall. We sort of end up in a similar place. However, let's stay with those disciples for a minute. They couldn't move. They couldn't budge. Now, we see the disciples on the day of Pentecost, and they are all Pentecostals. But here in the boat, they are Episcopalians, afraid to move, gripped by their own fear. Do you ever feel like you can't budge? Ortberg reflects on a Garrison Keillor story. He writes this: Garrison Keillor tells a story called A Day in the Life of Clarence Bunsen, about an older man who realizes the years have slipped away and his life has missed something. Clarence goes to see the father at Our Lady of Perpetual Responsibility for some advice. Normally he goes to the Lutheran church, but he wants a second opinion. And when that doesn't help, he walks past his old school and climbs the hill overlooking Lake Wobegon, where he and his friends played as kids years ago. While he is reflecting on his life, Clarence hears some kids coming up the path. For some strange reason, he runs ahead of them and climbs an old tree he remembers from childhood. The kids stop right under his tree. They know he's around somewhere, but they don't think to look up. Clarence knew that if he dropped down on them or even yelled, "Ha!" they would jump out of their shoes. He watches them. They are so filled with excitement and life. And he thinks to himself, "I wish I could be like that. I just seem to go through life with my eyes closed and my ears shut. People talk to me, and I don't even hear them. Whole days go by, and I can't remember what happened. The woman I've lived with for 36 years, if you asked me to describe her, I'd have to stop and think about it. It's like I've lived half my life waiting for my life to begin, thinking it's somewhere off in the future. And now I'm thinking about death all the time. It's time to live, to wake up and do something. Live, wake up, and do something." Peter did. I've yet to hear of anyone else walking on water like Jesus, other than Peter. Now, of course, the theological lesson: Christ is fully human, fully divine. He's able to walk on water. But for an instant, Peter was shown what it means to be fully human. The kingdom of heaven broke through, just for an instant, in Peter's life. What might that look like for us? What might it look like to face our fears head on? Now, we fear change in our lives and in our world because we really don't believe that anyone else can change either. What does Paul say? He says we are entrusted with bringing the gospel to others. In fact, the gospel doesn't get out without us. Are we in the boat, sitting on the gospel, because we are afraid to get out? Brother Curtis Almquist says, "We need to be agents of other people's conversion. I'm not saying we presume or require that other people change and that they change on their own terms. Rather, I'm saying our role is to allow and to enable others to change. We are not called to incarcerate people to their past, but rather to be agents of their freedom. Some people do not change, especially to change for the better, because those who surround them could not imagine or allow them to be any different. In my own brokenness, I am so aware of how easy it is to look on someone being worse because I could not countenance them being better. What are you saying? Is that when others see those who have gotten out of the boat, those who have been changed by Christ, they might in fact be willing to get out of the boat as well. This is what you experience at Kairos. I believe the reason people do not turn to Christ is because they don't have the pluck to do so, because of what it will require of them. And if we don't have the nerve to tell them, well, there we are, wringing our hands, thinking about the terrible things in the world. What is there to be afraid of? I sing a song of the saints of God, and we have a little illustrated version of that at our house. And there's the one that is slain by the fierce wild beast. Does anybody know who that is? It's the one is slain by the fierce wild beast. It's Ignatius of Antioch. And there's a big picture of this lion, and my kids are always, when they're little, always a little afraid of that picture, but they want to go back and see it again. Ignatius was an apprentice of John, the evangelist, in the early 2nd century. Persecution was afoot in that time, and it could happen at any time. Ignatius was a bishop, and bishops were targeted, just like they are in many parts of the world right now. Was he afraid? I'm sure he was. But here's what he wrote to the Church of Rome. Allow me to become food for the wild beasts, through whose means it will be granted me to reach God. I am the wheat of God, and I am ground by the teeth of the wild beasts, that I may be found the pure bread of Christ. Now, shortly after these words were written, he was thrown into the arena, and he was killed by a lion. Talk about facing the fears. Well, how can we do that? There's a man in the book of Mark, in chapter 9, who had a child who was demon-possessed. He was desperate and afraid, so he asked Jesus, "Heal my child." Jesus said anything was possible for those who believe. And what did the desperate father say? "I believe. Help my unbelief." But when Peter noticed the strong wind, he became frightened. And beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him. We begin and we end with Jesus. That's the only way to face fears. That's the only way, and sometimes the only prayer we have is, "Lord, save me. Lord, I'm courageous. Help me in my fear. Lord, I believe. Help my unbelief." Amen.